I think we can get started. So, first of all, thank you all for staying so long and until the very end after these very intense sessions that we had. So, we've just gone through almost a full day of presentations and more than a dozen speakers and all talking ISAC from different angles. Some repetition as well, but some very, very unique statements were done. So instead of repeating what we all heard today, I think the purpose of this panel would be a little bit different. So let's focus on connecting the dots and taking some challenge some of the assumptions, because now we can debate a little bit and maybe highlight what we actually are not agreeing at. That would be a great thing. You know, panels that are compliant, compliance, that they are not really fun. So but you have gone through, you have seen, you have met most of the panelists, and I will just introduce Lauriston Hardin from NTIA Innovation Fund, focusing on policy funding and commercialization of ISAC, which is quite spot on as a speaker, although he was just in the audience the whole day. So now you have the chance. And we have a good mix of operator, vendor, and AI innovator company, as I call DeepSeek, and a policy perspective. So let's use this time to focus on three simple questions. The first one is, where is the real business coming from? The second is, where should ISAC actually live in the architecture, or how this will work? And what, if anything, should ORAN standardize? Just those three questions are something that we could focus on this short panel. So let's start with the first question, and to you, Lauriston, maybe the hardest question. Is ISAC really becoming a business, or is it still a technology looking for a use case?
Okay. Yes, thank you very much. So I will first say that I am an engineer at heart, so I love technology. But remember that technology is just an enabler. It's not a business. Okay, you can't go out and sell a technology to a consumer and they think they want to be able to do something with it. So you heard me ask Brian Daly this afternoon, and they say, what's the commercial application of ISAC? And I'm going to argue, I don't know yet. Okay, so I'm sort of the USG representative. So I'll say that from a US government standpoint and from other government standpoints, there's a lot of uses for ISAC. Okay, there's a lot of use of that sensitive data. By example, FAA has a program they're looking at airspace management using ISAC, because while we have a bunch of commercial aircraft, then we have all the equipment on those. We don't have anything on drones all over the place, and they don't have to necessarily be what Steve presented as dangerous things. They're just there, and we need to manage that airspace in some manner. DHS has some interesting ideas on looking at crowd movements, which can predict certain things need to happen and certain activities need to occur to make people safe. So from a government standpoint, I think there are multiple use cases. I hate the word use case. Multiple business cases. ISAC is a network feature. It's not a use case. So then you look at it from the aspect, though, of we have AT&T here, so it'll be interesting to say. But so this we can assume for the moment, this, if we say 6G is going to have new spectrum. Let's just assume for the moment. I'm not going to say what it is. That's not my business in NTIA. But if it is, and it follows the general models, then it's going to be auctioned again. So if a carrier spends billions of dollars on spectrum, that then they're going to use up much of it just for sensing in the process, which you've heard. Depending on how much bandwidth you need, if it's multi-static, where you put in your signals, et cetera. Where's the money going to come back from spending it on that versus something else. So I would make the argument at the moment that I don't know what the consumer use case that will drive, let's say in the U.S., nationwide deployment of ISEC in new 6G spectrum yet.
Okay. Thank you. That's a great, let's follow it up with the operator a little bit. Dr. Salam, what would you say from your perspective? Would you deploy ISEC without a clear monetization model, or do you require dual use capability here?
I mean, I would frame maybe the question differently, because we don't know what a clear monetization opportunity that would let us deploy ISEC across all of our network, from San Francisco to New York, enable ISEC everywhere. That use case or like business case is not there yet. But we got to start somewhere, right? And then there is no shortage of use cases that were identified for ISEC. And some of them are more technically mature than the others. Some of them maybe have a path forward better than the others. We started with, POCs, feasibility. Can we deploy at a smaller scale? But if we do, can we make sure that whatever we're doing actually scales, so that we don't have to customize for everything, right? So I would agree that no one knows exactly how to make money from ISEC nationwide yet. There are use cases that are identified. There's definitely U.S. government interest, but also probably interest from all governments across the world as well. That is driving a lot of what we are seeing today, actually. And there are commercial use cases, like Brian mentioned this morning, related to local governments, Department of Transportation, et cetera, that they're interested in, that we are also exploring. Consumer use cases are the hardest, right? And arguably, monetization also is related to that. And then maybe the last thing that I want to link to what Larson said is related to spectrum. We're not looking to deploy ISEC only on new spectrum, right? That's not the point of the technology, right? But also, we want to understand how much overhead sensing takes from communication. So, because we are first and foremost a communication provider, right? But we're not just, saying, okay, if there's new spectrum, we don't know, with the US, how that new spectrum will be or where it will be. That's where we will deploy ISEC only. That's not the intention.
Okay, thank you. Just a quick follow-up on that. We heard today, what would be your comment on Steve Pampa, for example, challenged a little bit. The one perspective that he said something about that the first operator in a country will be the only one that will get the government business that is based on ISEC. So there is no time in that perspective. That could mean no time for slowly adapting and slowly getting to monetization and be careful. But you have to go all in. That's the interpretation I can take. So, like, just a quick comment on that, if you remember that kind of statement.
Yeah, I mean, I heard his statement. I've also heard this statement before. Will ISEC be a kind of a one government, one contract, and whoever wins it ends up with it, similar to like FirstNet and AT&T in a way? Or will it be, every operator will have something? And of course, he also talked about TN and NTN, and there's room for both as well, right? So I don't think we know the answer to that yet, but definitely I've heard it being discussed before.
Okay, that's fair. Thank you, Loris.
I just want to add to that, that I think one of the arguments that Steve was making was it'll be a new 9/11 event. So in that situation, the first to the market would most probably win. I don't know that that's the case, though. That's a whole matter of timing. And then have the use cases or have the business cases already come up and stuff been deployed. And then it just is business as usual. And there could be multiple carriers operating in the space.
Okay, thank you. So let's move a little bit to the technical side. I mean, those guys here are mostly technical. So there are some different views, but Job, if I turn to you and ask you, there seem to be some kind of fundamental tension on where to put things. So intelligence in the radio, or pushing it further up into software and AI. Where should ISAC actually live in the architecture? Don't restart the whole presentation that you had, but just like, what would you say would be your choice of parts where ISAC components, and ISAC components is not only one, it's like many, right? Flowing from antenna to the AI. So what would your take on
that? You have to break it into two domains. So the guys like private networks space, the guys who buy small cell, in their domain, ISAC is just a box that has the CUDU. They don't care, even the rig could be integrated in there. They just need the service. So for them, they don't care where does it live. That question is, I think, more pertinent maybe to the MNO guys, that have the disaggregated network, and they have radio, they have DU, and especially if they have different vendors, where do you do it? But like I said, I think that debate is pretty much going to be addressed by physics, right? So if you have a low latency, you can't do really practically, it's impossible for somebody to say, hey, radio vendor, just send me your entire INQ data, I'll process it in the DU. It's, you could do a demo with that, but it's not going to be a real practical deployment, right? So detection will end up being in the radio. And then, tracking would be in the DU, et cetera, et cetera. And then, what people want is, so for example, I think what could happen for, as a possible example is, let's say there are three major operators here in the US. The government will say, hey, I want to fuse my radar data with what is being read from yours. So what they will say is, let's do this sensing as a service. And then the three vendors' core or their sensing function will interop with the government's, government function to share data with them. So that's practically how all of this would actually work. So I think the question of where is sensing going to be was pretty much going to be answered by physics.
Okay, right. Related to that a little bit, and going back a little bit to the operator, I think the data. Like the data that is flowing out from this chain of stacks and the network elements, who controls the data really? Like who would be the one controlling and then monetizing it? There are several. So like, could you monetize the IQ samples as an example, or what else could you monetize and who would control it? Like, can you make a comment on that?
I mean, there's arguably the value of ISAC is in the data, right? And who would make money out of the data, whether the operator or the vendor, or eventually the data is very important for the customer as well. And then arguably also the value of maybe processed data, it might be, higher than value of raw IQ samples, or depending on the customer as well. So I guess it depends on what you are trying to do and how do you want to get the data there, right? So your question was basically, how do you make money out of the data, or would you make money?
Yeah, which part that you can see as a possible data that would go out, would you be able to monetize or would you like to monetize most?
I mean, again, it's if you're monetizing the sensing service, then what are you offering, right? Are you as an operator, and this is, you know, all speculations, right? Are you as an operator being the acting as the sensor? Basically, I reached to a point where I can tell you that there is something out there and my work here is done, and I will give you the data that is you know, the XYZ or velocity location and be done. Or am I going to be the platform that actually does some of the multi-static, multi-model fusion and give you more information? What model works best, and what model works best for what customer too? So this conversation about, you know, how do you want to position yourself, you know, for different MNOs would be different. And then this, you know, relates to, again, the business value of sensing. And I think most of the speakers agreed that RF sensing is just one component of the whole system that we are looking at. It's not the only component.
Okay, I sense that this question is a bit premature. So maybe you have not made up your mind, like, exactly, because there are so many things to discover. So thanks. If we go back to Oran and Tim, if ISAC is coming sooner or later, as we all agree on, at least at this point in time, what do we actually standardize there? Like in terms of standardizing too much is limiting innovation, right? And standardizing too little is limiting interoperability and the multi-vendor concepts. It's not a black and white question. So, like, how would you say what should we standardize, and what are the levels that you think are the most the bang for the buck?
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of discussion around dApps and ways to tap data in the modem today. I think there's so many still different configurations of UETRP and TRP monostatic and multistatic, like, that each one has a slightly different data arrangement. And it's not, I mean, I don't think that we've reached total clarity on what interfaces need to be there. So I think there's still a lot of pre-standards work and prototyping of different use cases that needs to happen to clarify that. I think we're kind of gaining a vision of some of the interfaces we need that came up frequently today. But I think if you look at, like, what do you need to deploy it at scale on, like, the AT&T network, like, we still need to prototype some of these use cases more comprehensively to really figure out which interfaces, I think. And the same with this monetization thing, like, how, you know, we need to have more rigorous work in trying these things out to figure out what that data can really do and what it's worth and how you can monetize it. So I think they're really, both of these are really tied up in, like, let's prototype these things, you know, much more extensively and then figure out how to standardize and monetize them.
All right. So, I mean, this kind of what to standardize or not, it's like an endless discussion can be taken, and there are so many studies to take on different levels. So I'll just try to ask a question, and you, each of you, will answer with yes, no. Is that okay?
Yes.
Yes. So, should ORAN standardize access to sensing data? Yes or no?
I think I need more information.
So I got a maybe, a next one. Yes, no, maybe to be discussed.
But what do you mean by sensing data? Like, what is ORAN standardizing, right? Because, again, there's, like, different parts of the sensing chain that you need to go through. And then some of them go through different interfaces from ORAN, right?
So let's make it simple, Dorsan. Pick one of them. tell which one do you think and answer yes or no on it.
No, I mean, I can tell you that probably Orange should work on the front haul interface, CUS and M-Plane, and to enable sensing. It needs to work on O1 to enable sensing. It needs to work on probably a little, you know, more interfaces to enable sensing.
Is that
the answer to
that? Because as close as the answer as it can be. Tim?
Yeah, I think it's clear there are interfaces we need to come to a standard on. But, you know, again, they're not all clearly defined yet. You know, we need enough interfaces that people can try out many of these use cases. And then, you know, so yes, definitely.
Okay. Job?
Yes.
Yes.
I think I mentioned that. My presentation, I'm just going to refer to that.
Yeah. Lauriston?
I think, unfortunately, we get the cart before the horse. Innovation comes first, standards come second. So in the process of saying, should O-RAN Alliance, 3GPP, TM4, Mono Care, should they standardize something? Well, you first got to understand what's the value chain and then how does it work and where are the places that standardization makes sense? Certainly, at some point, if you assume there's a third-party provider of sensing business, they're going to collect the data from somebody. Somebody else may, you know, then operate on that data, and they may then be the interface to the customer. So, depending on where you are in the value chain, defines what you need to have standardized, both from an interface standpoint and from a data model standpoint. We don't know what that value chain looks like yet. So yes, at some point it should be, just because then it enables more multiple people to be in the business. We just don't know what that is yet.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I think I said at the beginning of my presentation is that O-RAN is a natural place to have these discussions here, you know, this workshop, because you know, open architecture enables multi-vendor innovation. And then we need these standardized interfaces. We need to be able to, you know, have this data flowing in interfaces that are interoperable, etc. So that's highly important. Now, which ones will depend on basically what Job talked about, or I mean, maybe AirSpad's position will be different from Ericsson's position, will be different from Nokia's position, different from DeepSeek's position on this, right? So we have to agree on how do we make this work in an O-RAN perspective.
The one thing I'd add is see, you were at the Martin Weiss from Future G has now had his second ISAC conference, but the first ISAC conference last year, I think he brought up the issue of societal impacts in one of his panel. And one of the things there is you need to look at it. And I was sitting next to an attorney, so he could tell me stuff, that you've got a whole bunch of case law that doesn't exist yet. As far as the sensing data, how is sense, you know, are people, you know, giving their permission because they're walking in a public square for the data that you're about to take on them and use on them? So when you talk about standardization, you also have to think about what can somebody actually sell to somebody else in the process? And is there something around that whole model of how is it disclosed that needs to be standardized as well?
Okay. Thanks. Very good, good answers. Not yes, no, but for me, they work. So let me throw one for like to complete the story a little bit. A little bit provocative question, if it could be perceived like that. Are we overcomplicating all this? Like we've been doing radars for, I don't think centuries is the right word, but decades at least, and we already have dense networks. So why don't we just use that and integrate? Or is that a revolution here? Or is it just to just pick up what already exists and then assemble it?
Oh, I'll start. Oh, what the heck, yes. goes back again to that question. Just because we can do something, should we do it? Is sort of your question. I had a conversation last week, and we, you know, the person I was talking to has certainly a much greater radar background than I do, and they said, why don't we just put radars up? I mean, they're not that expensive compared. I mean, we're not trying to do over the horizon. We're not trying to characterize a lot of stuff that it may be cheaper, especially if you do something like drone detection or airspace management, to put up radars and be done with it in the process. So when you look at it, I think people have come up with a network feature of ISAC and have latched onto something, but I don't know that that's the real way that the business case is going to work. You know, that I don't know that drone detection is the business case for ISAC. When you add in all the other costs, especially the opportunity cost of not doing something else with that spectrum.
Great. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Any comments?
I mean, so the whole principle behind ISAC is dual use. That means you have a communications network and it can also do sensing. I think it's a failure of imagination, you know, that people don't know how to use it. But I'm pretty sure there's a lot of us who, you know, have proprietary systems that, for ISAC that we could actually do other things. For example, ISAC could help you with positioning, right? Could help improve your positioning. ISAC could help with, passive sensing that, Tim and Airspan, we're working on, you know, stuff. So there is the dual use aspect of it. That makes it much more cost effective, right? Can the US government deploy a nationwide radar? Yes, they have a global dome. But if you had a communication network, which is your backup, you could fuse data. So, you know, your adversary could jam your primary radar. You can now use, the standard network. I know we're running out of time, but I'll quickly give you an example of what Ukraine did. Was Ukraine used Russia's own network to actually attack Russia, right? So that's, I think, in the military term called, you know, hiding in plain sight. And those kind of things are what ISAC ultimately enables. Right?
Okay. Any other comments, closing points on this topic or anything else that you would like to add? I mean, we have had
on this topic, or
in general.
I think we're close to finish. So, last words. Yeah, we can take questions. Yes. It's a good thing. Thank you for reminding. It's a great idea. Do you have any questions to the panelists? Yes, we have one question. You have to find the microphone somehow. Yeah.
ISAC or otherwise, what topics covered today most excite you personally from a technology perspective?
Who wants to take that?
I'd say ISAC excites me.
To what level?
Yeah.
I kind of, you know, the last, Rodian Swartz, is, if you worked in the radar, then you know what reses are, or target simulators. And so that was an interesting thought. I hadn't even thought of it to this point. In the testing side of it, you're going to have targets, what you would call a radar, target simulators. And just the concept of how diverse that needs to be, how does it integrate into a digital twin you might have of the network and overlay against the vehicular traffic, the pedestrian traffic stuff. That's a piece nobody's up to this point. I hadn't heard anybody talk about. And I think it's going to be something that if you're going to say, yes, I'm going to have this and it's going to be in my network and it's going to work, well, how am I going to simulate those targets and make sure it does? That was exciting to me.
Right. I can add my excitement. I have been in almost 30 years in the industry, but this is pretty much the first time I feel that the RAN market that is boring and flat for how many, not centuries, but decades.
20 years.
Yeah. So suddenly now there is something. There is something that is actually based on the technology that we all have been working diligently in the telecom industry for years, that suddenly has an enormous monetization level for MNOs that will find themselves first, for the vendors that will actually be the first to come with the solutions, and innovation companies that will invent things for the new thing. And of course, the budgets have to come from somewhere. So like, but those budgets exist, and the need is there, and I'm enormously excited. Like, I don't want to retire now, which I really wanted.
I have a question.
Yes.
I think you asked earlier if we're over like complicating things. I want to flip the narrative a bit. What are we oversimplifying in ISAC, and what frustrates you about that? I want to hear it. I mean, I can talk about this for ages, but I want to also hear from you.
Okay, let's extend for, is it okay for 5 minutes? Yeah, so that's a good question. Who wants to answer?
So let me understand the question, Christina. Is it, what are we oversimplifying?
I mean, if you think about ISAC a few years ago, not a lot of people were talking about it outside of academia and pure research. Now everyone and their mother is talking about it, but everyone is also oversimplifying it. Like, oh, just radar, put it on the telco network, it works. We also do airplanes, but radios are not going to fly, you know? So the question is, what are we oversimplifying that is kind of like making it a challenge for you to make this both a technology and a business? What would you think of?
That is a little deep. It's more than 5 minutes question answer. But anyway, I'm going to say it's the architecture. I think the architecture sometimes is oversimplified. Like I said, some of the discussions that we had was a lot of people assuming we could just take IQ data and, take the raw IQ data and just pass it anywhere into the network. So there are things that are being oversimplified like that, I would say, for sure. Yes.
I'll say it's characterization. I mean, that's the hard part. You can get data, you can get, reflections from objects, and you can even get it in a multi-static way, but then you have to characterize what is that thing. And that's actually the hard part in data, is the characterization and how quickly you do that. So I think there's a lot of processing that has to happen both in real time and near real time that I don't think people are talking about yet. And that's going to take the creativity and power, processing power, the power to, pay for that processing power. So it's an interesting question.
Yeah, I mean, I think to that end, like, depending on what you're doing, whether it's counter drone or whether it's, intrusion detection or fall detection, like, you're going to want to use this sensor data differently. Like, whether it's single TRP or multi TRP or UE TRP, like, we have so many different versions of ISAC that, definitely arriving at what are the right interfaces and what are the right ways to create an app that you can go after one use case, and an operator can host the apps that they can monetize as they figure out what they are. Like, definitely figuring out the architecture with all the right interfaces is a major challenge right now that we just, I think we have to go a little bit fast and loose to figure out what works and then stick with what does.
Don't answer. Do you want me to?
You want to say? Yeah, please. Yeah.
I think it's all the above. I mean, what they talked about, and even more. I mean, it's a fundamental network shift. We're designing everything, and we forget how complicated that can be on the air interface, on the MAC scheduler, on the architecture, on making things work everywhere. Like, we're talking multi-static. Monostatic is not going to cut it all the time. Bistatic is not going to cut it all the time. We need synchronization. How do you involve the UE? How is the core involved? How do you get the data out? You are designing everything, right? So it's not, yes, I could see something on a dashboard and I'll be done with it. It's a lot more. And that's actually the exciting part for me. It's we're designing an end-to-end system. And, you know, there's a lot of challenges, but there's a lot of opportunities.
Yes. Yes.
I'd like to know the panel's opinion with all of this. What your best estimate, day one 6G, what level, what kind of ISAC will be realized, both in the standards work and in reality? 2029.
That's very specific. It's almost a yes or no question. 2029.
No,
describe the system.
I mean, there will be something in the standards. I mean, there's already something in the standard right now. 5G Advanced will be next year, right?
That's something falls into the category of oversimplifying everything, right?
Yeah. So, but for 6G, we'll have something.
On day one 6G, what kind of ISAC will be available and with monetizing opportunities?
I mean, again, it depends on the business value and what's going to drive that. And it goes back to the first question, right? But then right now, the way it's going, in my opinion, it's going to be a network-centric approach.
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly they're preserving a lot of optionality in modes in 3GPP right now. It seems like the simplest thing from a system architecture standpoint is going to be something like a monostatic TRP mode, right? That just doesn't have as much coordination. It doesn't have device side. Something like that seems likely to be maybe early adoption.
I'm going to say it's going to happen a lot sooner. I think you look at...
You mean 2029 will happen a lot sooner?
No.
The question was very specific.
Well, I think what you're asking is how soon will sensing actually get materialized or monetized, right? Not necessarily from a standards perspective, but I think it'll be done a lot sooner. And, you know, just like how companies like Starlink are making certain things a lot more urgent, you know, and war, sensing will definitely be commercialized a lot sooner. And I think one of the main drivers is going to be guys like, small cell vendors like us, who are not dependent on a disaggregated network. We can bring sensing out a lot sooner, and we will before the rest of the network. And at that point, everybody else will want to play catch up too, right? So just saying.
That's very, very optimistic, I think.
All right. So this is my opinion. I am not speaking for the U.S. government at this point. So I think you'll first see it in the private network environment because it makes sense. And there's ways to monetize that by example of, you know, positioning that sort of thing in the process. As far as what will you see as first broader deployments, in my opinion, that is more dependent on what the processing capabilities in the network are at that point. In other words, are there going to be enough processing capabilities to in a radio to do the detection work? Are there going to be small AI models in a UE? Are there going to be a moderate size AI model in the radio moving on back to the foundational models? That's what drives it in the process, not so much that it's ISAC or any other use case in 6G in the process. So for a more mass deployment. But I think in the short term, commercial, private network, commercial utilization will happen first and sooner.
So more of a to be, not to see.
Yeah, I would think so.
I think that was a very good closure for the panel. So at least how I feel. The timer is wrong. So thank you very much. The takeaways are many. I think for me, it's that the business case is still evolving. It's not defined yet completely, and the architecture is not settled. So hopefully in a year, we will have another panel where both of those will be settled, at least to some point.
But the opportunity is that.
Yeah, it's absolutely. So thank you very much for the great. Excellent.